as an institute.
Thanks, everybody. I think we'll make a start. You know, if you just take your seats while I just do the introduction, because we've got to be careful about time because the polls wait for no man. So, thanks, everybody, for coming. It's really great to see so many people here. I'm Nicola Wright. I'm the Director of Library Services here at LSE. And I'm really delighted to be able to welcome our distinguished panel, and particularly Sir David, who's come and whose face you'll see up there from 1975, so a long time ago now. We're very pleased to be able to offer this conversation, really, just as a bit of a scene setter before results from this referendum start coming in. So the materials that you see behind you here are all from the library's collection, and these were collected in 1975. And they represent a sample, really, of the kind of materials that the library collects. So this is political ephemera, but obviously we have archives, and we have the documents from various campaigning collections. And our curator of politics and international relations, Daniel Payne, has had quite a lot of fun, I think, over the last few weeks, digging around in the archives. And I don't know whether you were born in 1975, but yeah. Anyway, that's what it was like. But in this one, there is actually light, no candles, so you can tell it's 75 and not a bit earlier. So thanks very much, Tony. I'll hand over to you, and let's.
Okay.
To find out more.
Okay, well, very good. First, welcome to the first real event of this, the 2016 referendum. The reason, as Nicholas said, that we're here is because, of course, the last time there was a referendum of this kind was in 1975, for reasons that were not dissimilar, i.e. a major national political party split on the issue, needing to hold a referendum to try to sort the issue out once and for all. Well, that sort of worked, but not for longer than 41 years. And our guest of honour this evening is Sir David Butler, who has written books about general elections in the United Kingdom since 1945, if not before, and was one of the first ever academics to appear on BBC television programmes of this kind. This is a screen grab from the 1975 referendum campaign. We will be running from 10 o'clock onwards that program in real time. We can't show it before 10 o'clock, otherwise we would. And David also wrote a book about the 1975 referendum campaign. I'm also joined by my colleague, Professor Patrick Dunleavy. He's Professor of Political Science and Public Policy here at the LSE. And Sir Robert Worcester, who is the founder of Murray, the polling company. Polling companies have a lot to worry about this evening, as they always do now in elections, and also a governor of the school. But I want to begin, really, by asking you, David. I remember hearing you say at the LSE last year in the run-up to the general election, the first general election you remember is going with your mother to a meeting in 1931. But the 1975 referendum, what lessons can we learn from it about referendums in general, but particularly the one we're about to experience tonight?
On the whole, it's rather disappointing. I thought I'd got a certain authority to talk about referendums because I had worked very hard on the 1975 election, and I'd also edited two books on referendums as an international phenomenon. But I do find that this election is so different from 1975 that the lessons from it don't altogether work. One, I started citing when this election came over the horizon, that in February 1975, the polling was suggesting a 2-1 victory for out. By May, it turned into a victory for in, and was won by more or less 2-1 for the ins. The reason was that Harold Wilson, after a renegotiation, which was as bogus, I think, as David Cameron's was, but he came to the conclusion that he advised the British public to vote yes, having pretended that he was stalling, taking soundings and so on. And that just switched the public. But of course, the public, but why 1975 doesn't work is that the public was not, the issue was not such an entrenched one. We hadn't been in the common market. It wasn't an established institution in 1970, in the spring of 75. And also, the people, the two sides, there were virtually no conservatives who were outers. There were a few, but they didn't matter much. None of them were of any weight except for one, and that was Enoch Powell, who was then, in a sense, an ex-conservative. And the other leading figure was my great friend from undergraduate days, Tony Benn. And those two people, were both of them, had negative images in the public mind. And so it didn't do much good. All the established politicians and all the established papers were for in. It was a different world from the world here, where there were really significant people and some people of reasonable weight on the outside. So that is a different world to think about. It was covered. It was the coverage on. Was a little bit more one-sided. The government, as it were, there were three sides. There was the referendum campaign and the government campaign and the out campaign. And so they all three got more or less equal time. And it was rather unjust, and the outs had plenty to complain about in that sense then. But nonetheless, the ins won in this really handsome way. I remember Tony Benn saying, this election will... Inns may win, but they'll do it by wrecking the country, because Northern Ireland will certainly vote for out. Well, it didn't, it voted for in. And there were just, I think, two constituencies in the whole country that voted out both the Western Isles and Orkney and Shetland, I think.
I mean, when you were sitting in the studio in 1975 at this kind of moment, so as we run up to the point when the polls shut, was there any certainty about what the result would be?
I think it was pretty certain. I don't remember. I was on doing it, commenting on it on telly at the time, and I think it was generally assumed that was that. I mean, we have 2-1. Tonight we may be on tenterhooks. I'm not sure how far we are, or how far Bob is.
I'll ask Bob in a moment.
But in 75. There was a general understanding that the polls had said so emphatically, so solidly for at least 4 or 5 weeks before the election. So I think I'm pretty certain we all took it for granted.
Okay. Bob, I mean, were you polling the 1975 referendum?
Virtually every day.
And were you confident that this time, that night, that you'd got the result right?
Yes. Indeed. And what's more,
you're always confident, Bob, it must be said.
What's more, every other poll did. I'm reading from the 1st of May, 1975, my memorandum to Mr. Wilson, my client at the time. I was part of, a very key part, I finally said.
So you were doing polling for the Prime Minister in the run-up to this referendum?
And for the referendum steering group, which was 8 members of the Cabinet. 2 very senior Sherpas from the Foreign Office, Bernard Donoghue sitting in for the Prime Minister, head of the policy unit, Tom McNally was with Jim Callaghan at the Foreign Office, John Grant, the Minister for Information in the Cabinet Office, and 4 or 5 other people. And I want to read from that because I want to back up what David said. On the 1st of May, I wrote this piece. The public polls have been remarkably static over the last month or so. Yeah. NOP is the latest, due to be published next week. Those were the days. With fieldwork 22, 27 April, showed 55 in, 28 out, with 17 undecided. Details follow. And removing the don't knows from that, removing the undecideds, which range from 12 to 18%, the polls show a constant 2-to-1 ratio. Harris, 67-33. ORC, 68-32. ORC, 2 weeks later, 67-33. Gallup, at the same time, 67-33. and NOP with the latest one, 66.
So the polls were getting it right. I want to ask Bring Patrick. Okay, a month ahead. Okay,
that was my point.
Bring Patrick. Yeah,
there's one other sentence I want to add to what David said, and there was something that really resonated with the British people about Enoch Powell and Tony Benn and one or two others on the outside of the argument. They were described as the men with staring eyes, and the image stuck.
Interesting. Men with staring eyes. Pat.
Well, yes. I mean, I think the interesting thing is that the British public has had two previous opportunities to vote to leave the EU. 1975 was one. 1983 was another, because that in the general election of that year, the Conservatives were in favour of staying, and Labour under Michael Foot was in favour of leaving. And it's interesting that exactly the same thing happened with British public opinion in 1983 that David has just described, where, you know, the British public has this resting state of we hate the EU, up to the point where they have to say, yes, we'll leave, and then they kind of seem to edge away from it. So in 1983, you know, suddenly we had a six-week blip where the British public loved the EU because they were going to vote for Margaret Thatcher anyway, and she was in favour of the EU, and cognitive dissonance was too great to hold the two things together. So do you think, David, this is going to happen again? Do you think we're going to have the third time round that the British public backs away from...
I think that... I make a much wider point about referendums, that overall, they have been small-c conservative. They are in favour of the status quo. If you take the genuine referendums in democracies, and I wrote a book about that, looking at the figures around the world, and it wasn't universal. There were some striking exceptions, but by and large, referendums happen when the government calls them, and then the government calls them when it thinks it's going to win. In this occasion, it looked a few weeks, it looked once or twice in the last 2 months, that Cameron had made a mistake. I don't think he has, but again, I may be made a fool of in the next 6 hours or so.
Well, it's certainly going to be much closer. And it's also, as Bob was saying, you know, the staring-eyed people are the outers, and the elite is all... It was in 1975, everybody was in favour, except some of the left trade unions...
Morning Star,
yeah.
Communist newspaper, Britain's remaining communist newspaper, was in favour of
the Spectator, consistent as ever.
Right. But do you have to be a bit bonkers to want to leave the EU, is all I'd say.
I had the opportunity to try and explain this to an American audience this afternoon, and the chap was asking me, what are the three reasons that you can come up with for people to want to remain, and thinking that the audience would never understand what I was saying and would completely be confused by it, I had a long explanation that this wonderful British phrase, English phrase particularly, hanging on to nurse, described it, I thought, very well, but it wasn't a nurse in a hospital as the patient was dying. It was when the little kid whose nurse it was.
Nanny.
Nursemaid, nanny, thank you. Except that the phrase is always hanging on to nurse, not hanging on to nanny. I don't know, perhaps it is. I'm bilingual, more or less, after 48 years of living in this country and working in 13 general elections. And that was one of the key factors, I think, of hanging on to nurse, and I think it's working today.
David. I know it's a trivial point, but, you know, it's been in the news today. Am I right in saying that weather, and the weather has been a bit biblical in London and the southeast, it's not actually been like this ever in the country for the appointment. Does the weather make, is there any evidence about the weather and voting?
It's the weather that does make a difference. Yeah. Obviously, God was on the side of the inns, because that's certainly the most conservative parts of the country that it was rained on. But, no, on the whole... And each time I wrote books on each election from 1951 to 2005, and each time I did make an inquiry with the Weather Bureau or just took it straight from the Times, but I got regional information, and it was pretty negligible. The turnout was not kept down. I think it can be kept down much more in by-elections. This morning, I must say, when I voted in Oxford, I was told, I said, well, what's turnout like? And they said, way up. 20% up on the general election of last year.
It does seem to
be. Don't know, it was just one polling card.
We're getting indications from Scotland it's going to be very high there. In my area, it seemed to be heading for about 70%.
Bob, on the weather, briefly, yep.
Briefly on the weather, yes, there is a little evidence. In 1972, probably urged by David to look into this, I wrote an article in New Society magazine, much-missed publication, called, and the title, it was entitled, Winning in the Rain, Mr. Wilson, because everyone thought that Labour voters, that the Tories would be driving or being driven to the polls, but Labour were walking. And so I asked the interviewers to report that while they were interviewing out in the street, what was the weather, not in the street, house to house, we used to do house to house surveys in those days, what was the weather like while you were out? And it was a clear indication that the Labour wanted Mr. Wilson in more than the Tories wanted to keep Mr. Heath in at that time.
Okay.
And so that was why that was turned around. The general received wisdom was that it did affect the outcome marginally, as David says, but it was fun that time.
Okay. Now, we've got about 4 or 5 minutes left. David, yeah, we could take some questions. What a good idea. Actually, thank you, Patrick. Yeah. What a good idea, say to me. I mean, and you would like to ask this distinguished expertise a question or two about the conduct of the 75 referendum, or frankly, the conduct of this referendum. Now is the time. Please, yes.
Yeah, I have a question.
Say broadly who you, roughly.
My name is Chris Cummings, I'm from Austria.
Can you, if we got a have a microphone, it would probably help.
I can shout.
Yeah, but we just need to make sure we know all here.
Okay.
Sorry, I mean, just, not having a go at you, but.
Thank you. Yeah, my name is Chris Cummins. I'm from Austrian Radio. What interests me, there's been a lot of talk about the quite ugly rhetoric in the referendum this time and very divisive slogans. 40 years ago, was the tone more gentle? Was it more civilised?
Good question. David.
I'm sorry.
Was the tone more gentle in 70? This time, the tone has been really aggressive. At least it's got
certainly,
so much rancorous.
Much more gentle then. It didn't come. None of the prominence here. I ought to have reread what I wrote about it with Hugo Kitzinger in 1975. And as I recall it, we really did speak of it as on the whole, a civilized discussion. There were no particularly outrageous things said by either side, as I recall it.
So I think we're getting, it was more rancorous this time, you're right.
There was no immigration in 1975, that wasn't part of the thing. The European common market was very much seen as an economic thing, so it was very much a sort of economics base.
Carol O'Connor, I'm interested in the phrasing of the poll question at that time. Forgive me if I misquote, but I think it was something like, do you want to join the EC or the common market? Whereas now that the issue is going, leaving or staying, the phrasing has got to be different. And given your who you are in terms of the Maury poll and whatnot, is there any view about the way that the poll question, the election poll? Yes.
Sorry to cut you off. I have to do this very quickly because we need to get into the hall
yes.
in
Sorry about
4
that.
Minutes. No, it's not your fault. I know we've got to.
Very briefly.
Question.
The arts complained much less before. This time we've got more heavyweight, more people who were newsworthy making quite strong points.
But was the question very different?
The question different? There were complaints from the arts that the question was loaded.
Yes.
And it was, and there were, after all, three pamphlets put out, one by the government, one by the Inns as a separate organisation, and one by the Outs. And they got three mailings.
The way you phrased it wasn't quite right, because it wasn't joined.
Yeah, we were already in.
We were already in. Very similar questions, but just one more sentence on it. I advised Mr. Wilson not to ask a yes-no question, because that would be biased. And in the House of Commons, he stood and announced that it is going to be leave or stay, yes or no. And
okay.
That pause,
right, we have to stop. I'm sorry to
cut you off.
Sorry to do this, but we've got to go to the main hall now. You'll be able to hear Patrick again, and me actually, after 10 o'clock. So enjoy the beginning of the main proceedings. See you all later. Thank you.
Thank you,
David
much.
Butler, Bob Worcester, Pat Dunleavy.
Thank you very much.
Excellent. David, we'll take you to the main hall.
Apologies for...